On this episode of Sunday Morning Linux Review, recorded March 22nd, 2015, we'll have Matt and Tony battling it out on an episode of Is It Alive?
Is It Alive? Who will win?
Yes, stay tuned. we also will have a distro review on a interesting distro that rhymes with Aurora.
Right. We'll have some listener feedback.
Yeah, interesting.
Actually,
listener
quite,
feedback.
Quite a bit of listener feedback.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And of course, we'll have our normal witty banter and news bits. And
I think it's a little. You're setting us up for the fall there, if you call it witty banter from the get-go.
Banter that may or may not be witty.
There you go.
But anyway, stay tuned.
The Sunday Morning Linux Review. Starring Mary Talbot. Tony Venus. And Matt Anders as the Beaver.
And this is episode 147.
Spring.
Does
that sound good? It feels good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm down to just a hoodie. That's all I wore today. No more winter coat.
Hey, we didn't say our names.
No, we didn't.
And you're
this
right.
This is Tony Bemis.
Matt Enders.
And Mary Tomich.
All right.
Just to make sure everyone's
yeah.
Everyone knows.
Yeah. Yeah. After we got the emails from last week, I don't want anybody getting
confusing
me confused
us
with you, Matt.
Yeah, that guy is mentally unbalanced.
We'll talk about that later.
We'll talk about that
during our listener feedback.
Anyway,
So,
welcome. And so it's spring because it actually started spring, two days ago?
Friday night? A little after 6 p.m. on Friday night. I was at the Detroit Institute of Arts viewing the Frida Kahlo exhibit. So I was getting culturized.
All right.
So.
Yeah, and that's open to all county residents, right? There's no admission for...
Yeah, not to the
DIA.
But to that, it's a special exhibit, so there is a small admission fee.
Yeah, whenever they do that, like when they did that Picasso exhibit.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I went to that Picasso
exhibit. You're free
to go
to the museum anytime. Nice. It's a great place.
Yeah, and they have it segregated, so it's not like it's... You won't just stumble upon... At least they did when they had the Picassos.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's up on the second floor, and you've got to take the elevator, and then it's... Yeah, you're right.
Right. Cool.
So, anyway, all right. So what happened? So somebody needs to start and tell us.
Actually, I had a very boring week. I didn't really do anything. I've been very diligently working on my presentations for PenguinCon, working on some scripts for work.
I should be too.
I'm glad that one of us is.
Oh, it's just I'm overwhelmed. I've been working on that book review for Tarsnap Mastery by Michael Lucas.
Yeah, that's going to be happening next episode.
Next episode.
This episode is a distro review episode.
Yes.
We'll talk about that later.
Yep, and also next episode, Kevin O'Brien's coming on to talk about PenguinCon.
PenguinCon.
Maybe we should just end this episode and start that one. Sounds like a lot of fun.
No, I'm not ready. I'm about halfway
done. That's right. I worked hard on that distro review. I want to give that distro review. So, all right. Well, Tony, what about you?
All right. Well, this week, busy stuff. I got classes and work, and at work we did a switch upgrade and added a couple switches to our warehouse, because that's where our deployment guys are going to be sitting. So they image the computers there before they go out to the hospitals. And they gave me the switches and said, go ahead and do it. So,
more
responsibility.
Were you nervous when you were doing it?
No, I felt really good.
Great.
And everything went smooth. I plugged them all in and I did the thing. There was maybe 5 minutes of downtime. And I had to reconfigure the interfaces on the router and have everything up and running.
But didn't you do that all in advance?
Not the router. I couldn't, because once I reconfigure the router, then it takes down the current switch. So I had to do that right then. But it's really just copy
but
and paste.
The way they do it at work is they do it as an image on like their laptop. And then what they do is they push the new image, reboot the router.
Oh, no, we don't have to. With And I, because I didn't want to do the entire thing with the Cisco routers, you can just update a section of the up of the configuration. So, and it was just one interface. I had to turn one interface on and take that config and put it on the other interface. And you can do it all in Notepad, copy and paste it in, as you know, on the fly. So it really took me like 2 minutes to do that part.
Yeah, but our network guys are always complaining that they have to schedule a maintenance window just to add a VLAN to a switch.
Really?
Even though that's not going to cause any downtime.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's pretty bad.
Our management is very paranoid about.
I thought you were a pirate.
our management is very paranoid about making accidental downtime, so they force them to schedule a maintenance window.
That's pretty bad.
Well, I think maybe it's just cautious.
Well, the thing is, VLANs. It doesn't make any effect until you actually apply that VLAN to a port.
What is a VLAN? Is that a virtual local area network?
Yeah. Right. So you can do is you can have one network switch.
Lucky me.
And have multiple networks on that one switch, and like two ports can be for your VoIP, and two ports can be for a server, and like 10 ports can be for desktops. And then say you add another one in because you're going to throw a wireless access point on there.
Well, we just have so many VLANs because we put all of our IP ranges that we assign to servers are different VLANs.
Yeah.
So just so that we can't get crosstalk from.
Excellent.
Right, but so you can add a VLAN without affecting any ports.
Exactly.
And it's not like you're adding the interface. It's just saying allow
this VLAN on the switch. Yeah. Allow this VLAN traffic, you know, this tag.
Although if they do it wrong, they can remove all VLANs off of that.
Well, which trunk would take that switch down.
Which would take it down and cause downtime. And so I can see that part of why they would be paranoid about it.
But that's come on.
Right. Well, because there's the configuration is, if you say just add like VLAN 445, then it removes all VLANs and adds just that one VLAN to the trunk. But so you have to copy
it's
what's
like when
there.
You add groups in Linux, it's exactly. If you use the wrong switch, you wind up with just that one group rather than it being added.
Yeah. So that was my fun for the week.
I think it's probably best practices to add that maintenance to do that or schedule it for a maintenance window.
It's best paranoid practicing.
You know, I'm more in favor of YOLO.
YOLO.
You only live once, baby. Boom.
Yeah, but you could get fired once, too. But anyway, so.
I have a script in my Bash RC called YOLO.
All right.
We won't talk about what
And
it
then
does.
On top of work stuff, then I had a bunch of computers to work on the last couple weeks.
Years or family members? Or?
No, friends for his, and family. For his business, probably.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm not really doing the business anymore. I'm just doing it for friends and family. But it's like I had two laptops. One had a broken screen. Another one. No, I actually had like six laptops to work on. One had a cracked screen, so I replaced that. Another one had a broken hinge, so I just had to replace the one hinge.
Duct tape.
Right. And then two new laptops for my sisters. Viruses on a couple other ones. And
oh, jeez. So you're busy.
Yeah.
You know.
Wow.
I tell them I remove one virus for free. After that, Linux or I don't do anything.
$50 a virus.
Linux or I don't do anything.
Yeah.
One virus for free. That's your first virus removal is free after that.
Yeah, and then $100 a piece, and there's 250 in your computer. So you.
Whoa.
Yeah, because there's never just one.
Right.
Wow. Were these Windows 7 machines or XP?
Windows 7.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Do they have virus programs on?
Actually, the one didn't. It expired the year after they bought it. It was like 2011.
But they still see that little icon down there, so it's still doing its job.
So,
yeah, that's,
so after I cleaned it out, I uninstalled anything virus or antivirus kind of that was related on that computer and then reinstalled. I just put Microsoft Security Essentials.
Yeah.
I know it's not the best, but
you know
it's
what?
Easy.
If you read the comparisons, it's close enough to AVG and Avast that...
Yeah.
And
it's not going to prompt them in a year to upgrade or pay or for a new version. And So I figured it's...
Wow, it's yeah, Microsoft. Because
when
love.
I was still doing the Windows support for schools and things like that, I switched. I had started out using AVG, and then I switched over to the Essentials mm-hmm. from Windows Essentials.
Yeah.
All right.
Cool. Well, that was my week. What'd you do, Mary?
Not much. Just plugged away on my Python course. It's starting to make a little more sense now. I had troubles with the loops, I got to tell you. While and for and all that.
Because
they give you exercises and you have to replicate. They have this auto grader.
What problem did you have with the loops?
Well, they gave you this exercise so that your output had to match their output. And I did. And then it came back and said, but you didn't use this. And I thought, oh, crap. So it must read my code. So I had to go back and redo it so that I had the correct loop in there, and then it worked. It's just, you know, when you don't do that on a regular basis and you first learn about it, it's just a little bit of a challenge. Because I had to count down. In other words, not to drag us further off course here, but one of the exercises was to take a variable had been assigned, I think the word banana or any fruit. And then what the loop had to do is to take and list the word spelled backwards, each character on a line. And, I did that at first. It counted down, and then it counted back up again. So I had it twice. So I went down to B, and then I went back up to, you know, banana underneath. And I thought, how did I do that? Oh my gosh, it was crazy. But I got past it, and now it's starting to make sense. So I'm happy about that. And I had planned to do a little free BSD, checking or testing of this thing that was posted in Google Plus about recovering a root password. Not that I've lost my root password, but I wanted to see if it could be done. Right. But I just didn't have time to do it. And then I worked on my distro review. So that's it.
Cause I was having a real problem with a while loop in a script I was writing this week too. I was doing a file check to see if, first I wanted to make sure that the file was not empty, which is easy at -S, right? But I couldn't get it to work right, because then sometimes it would, when I wrote it one way and the file wasn't there, or was empty, was there but empty, it would work right. But then it would also throw the same error it was supposed to throw when there was an empty file, when there was a file with data. it would do the data what it was supposed to do with the data, and then throw the error at the bottom. I'm like, what the F are you doing?
Yeah.
And I just couldn't get it figured out. So finally I had to give up. And, I tried saying not.
I did that a few times.
So then I had to give up and just post a question on, Stack Overflow. Got my answer in like 20 minutes. And I'm like, the answer was just don't use the while loop. Do it differently. I'm like, I can do that.
Yeah, you know, that part
just
of the thing.
Just use an if statement instead
overthinking.
Of a while loop.
Yeah, overthinking it or making it more complicated than it is. And that, I've done that.
Yeah. So it all works now.
Excellent.
Yeah.
It's good to hear. So, okay. I guess we'll move on then.
Yes.
All right. So first up is
Matt. What's happening with the kernel?
Matt's kernel.
Is the kernel news that as soon as I move this window off the top of my browser, I'll have for you. There
Excellent.
We go.
Excellent.
So the main line is at 4.0-RC4, released on 3.16. And then the newest stable kernel is 3.19.2, released on 3.18. Then we have 3.14, long-term kernel 3.14.36, released on 3.18. Long-term kernel 3.12.39, released on 3.19. Long-term kernel 3.10.72, released on 3.18. And that's all for the kernel news.
Thank you, Matt.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Matt. You know, I kind of miss your kernel developer quote of the week. Is there any chance we'd ever get that back?
There is certainly a chance, and how about I will have one for next time?
All right.
All right. Then I guess we're going on to...
Tony, what's going on with the Linux distributions this week?
The distros for this by week.
Yeah, we had some listener feedback on this, too.
That's right. It's for this first one.
Yes, it is.
We did? Did I miss it?
Apparently. If you didn't read it, you did.
I must have missed it.
It came in today.
Oh, I did. I didn't see it then. Okay.
at 2:40. He says he's anticipating
Tony's review of this particular distro. Yeah,
he spells it Makalulu.
He does that on purpose.
He does that because you say that.
It was is that Julian?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So starting off on 3/9, that's March 9th, 2015. Mm-hmm. We have Makalulu Linux.
Makulu.
Makulu.
Yeah. Get rid of the between.
I did that time. I didn't.
You
say
didn't
it.
Say the A, but Makulu. You still added the extra Ulu.
I did Lulu. Lulu. Yeah.
There you go.
Makulu.
Makulu. Yes. That's not what you said.
All right.
Makulu.
Makulu. That's Mary's.
Makulu.
Makulu.
Not Makulu. Makulu.
Not Maka.
Right. You know, anyway. I don't know if you guys noticed, but in this 2-week segment, the number of production ready distros on the list is very short. So the fact that we're spending time on this is not going to impact the show length.
All right. But this is version 8.0 Cinnamon Edition, which anything that starts using Cinnamon is awesome, I think.
Yeah, and
my favorite window manager.
Yeah, well,
desktop.
We all
isn't
can't
it full
use
desktop?
KDE, the best window manager.
Desktop, yeah, KDE is the best.
And it's a desktop environment, not necessarily.
We probably alienated half our listeners. And by the way, too, this particular release of Makulu, or Makalulu, includes what they're calling the Makulu Construction Kit. Now, what this does is it offers an extremely easy way to build distros. And according to Jacques, who is the maintainer of this distro, he says, you can now shave months and months of build time and put out a Debian distro in a matter of days or weeks, depending on your development speed. So, and on their site, they've got a video, which I did watch, at least probably 3/4 of it when I was prepping. And he walks you through it, and he's got all these scripts are in the background that have already been prepped that do a lot of that heavy lifting so that you can then spend your time on kind of configuring what you want.
Right, making the tweaks you want for
your
distro.
Yeah, exactly, before you roll it out. So it was pretty cool. And I think that he's requesting money for that, which kind of makes sense.
Is he not, he's requesting like donations?
Yeah, but I don't think you can get the constructor kit unless you donate. So he's kind of shut that
off. He's doing it as like a perk.
Yeah, it's a perk, but you have to pay for that.
No. That's what
yeah.
I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
He's doing it as like a perk for his donators. Mm-hmm. You donated, so now you get this tool.
Yeah, but I think you have to donate $100.
Well, yeah.
For a year's worth of, and it includes the kit, the support, and, you know, that type of thing, so.
Now, does he only distribute it in binary form so that you can't really give it away?
I don't think so. I think he probably is hoping that the honor system holds, and I think it generally does.
I believe so, too. You never saw book sales go up so much as when you removed DRM. Like, No Starch did that thing recently with what's the game? The game.
Steam?
Humble Bundle.
Oh, Humble Bundle.
And they did that Humble Bundle book thing for kids, and they sold like $840,000 worth of books in like 3 weeks or something.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's cool.
I think most people do the right thing. But just to wrap up Makulu, he said, now even the dumbest guy in the world can build a distro.
Yay.
Oh,
hey, Tony, let's put out a distro.
That's
And one other little thing to note that I kind of chuckled at, as he was doing his video, the screen kind of, it went from full-blown screen to, you know, just the less than full-blown, whatever that's called, restore down, whatever. You know, with the button you hit up there in the corner. Anyway.
Okay.
Yeah. He's running that Linux stuff in a Windows 8.
VM?
Yeah.
Oh.
I laughed. I thought, oh my God, that was funny. So anyway, but that aside.
Which was running in a VM on Linux.
Oh, probably. I just missed that part. But anyway, that constructor kit seems pretty cool just based on what I saw. So, okay.
All right.
That's all I have on that.
That's all?
Yeah.
All right, on the 12th we have Shikara GNU Linux 15.
Commonly known as Chakra.
Chakra.
You know, Tony, I think, yeah. You, it does sound attractive, though.
Chakra. Chakra. What did you call it, Mary?
Chakra.
What did you call it, Mary?
Chakra. All right. I Americanized it.
You ever seen that? I'm an ugly American. Seen that commercial? Chase. Yes. Oh my God. We're not going there, everyone.
Doing Chase.
Chase.
And she's out in the Chase. On the shade doing Chase.
We're not. That's it. For anyone who's outside the U.S., there's this commercial where they're kind of going back and forth on how to pronounce what I call Chase Lounge.
Yeah, Chase Lounge.
That's how I do it.
Me too, because I'm an American.
But anyway, so, but it's, Chakra.
All right.
Chakra.
Yeah.
Continue, Tony.
And this is an update to their Euler series. Is that how you say it? Euler?
Euler? Euler? Euler? Anyone? Euler.
Bueller?
Anyone?
Euler.
Euler, was it, was he an, oh, he was a mathematician?
I have no idea.
Yeah, he was. I think he came up with something. Hmm. I apologize. I didn't even look it up. I almost confused him with Escher, the guy that you would...
The stairs.
Yeah, oh, my God. So, anyway, but Tony will research that while I mention a couple things about Chakra. You know, their installer is called Tribe, which I think it took them a while to kind of get that thing ready for prime time. But it apparently now has gained support for UEFI installations. And although it doesn't currently officially support RAID, LVM, and GPT, said, but you could probably find some workarounds on the forum. So they've got a couple of limitations in detecting hybrid cards. I'm only saying negative things about Chakra. Remember, I ran it for a while?
Yes, you did.
Because that is a KDE-centric
distro. Yes, they are. And they're cutting-edge KDE.
Yeah, and they spun off from, I think, Arch. So they use Pac-Man. But anyway, so they said you could definitely use free drivers and then switch manually to the proprietary ones. So.
All right. Yeah, it's the Euler method. is an SN order for numerical procedures for solving ordinary differential equations.
E.g., he's a mathematician.
That's right.
Yep.
Yeah. Kind of like
and
the
it says
pro football
also
player.
See Euler calculus.
He was a pioneering Swiss mathematician and physicist. So, there you go. So, related to calculus. I remember hearing about it when I took calculus in college.
All right.
I left the word tutor out of that sentence.
I never took calculus.
I did, but I had to have...
It took me two tries to get Algebra 1.
I took it, but I had to have tutorial help. But tutor. I paid money for a tutor to help me, and I passed.
I never did calc either. I did all the math up to calc, and then it wasn't
trig
required for my
Yeah, so Algebra 1,
degree.
Algebra 2, and trig.
Yeah, and it wasn't degree. The calc wasn't required for my degree, so I didn't continue on with that.
Well, that makes sense.
But I tutored.
Why prolong the math pain?
Right.
You don't need to.
I was actually the tutor for all the lower maths.
Were you?
Yeah, at the community college. They paid me like $25 a session, and so I'm like, hey, I'm at school anyways. Why not?
I think it's all in how you teach it, because I had sometimes teachers or professors or instructors just don't know how to teach math. They know math, but they don't know how to teach it.
Well, especially if they're mathematicians, because mathematicians are a special breed.
You know what made me or helped me pass a couple of my classes is I tutored the class I was actually in. I tutored another student that was in there, so he and I would sit down and go over the material again, and then I would actually remember it and be able to pass tests.
So he was tutoring you, but he didn't know it.
Right.
Funny.
That's actually pretty smart.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's just that reinforcement.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. Next up we have is Robo Linux 7.8.3.
Yeah, they've been busy.
Yeah. And so they're Debian stable, and they have all sorts of desktops, which they're announcing the Ultra X10 privacy and security, which I have no clue what that means.
Well,
I think it has to do with that new application they're offering.
Oh, the
Stealth Text Vault?
Yeah, you know what that is?
No, go ahead.
It uses Steghide.
Oh, I know what that is.
A steganography program which hides
your data file in a photo. Steganography. I was into that for a while and played. This was a few years ago, but I was into it for a while and played around with played around with steganography. It's really, really cool.
Yeah, because on their site, I watched a video there too that showed the process. And yeah, it prompts for the photo and the text file. And then I think there's also a password that's required. So it will then embed it in that photo. He opens the photo with the text embedded, and you can't tell when you
look
at it. Not at all. And then when it comes time to extract the text file, then it kind of reverses that process. And then he opened the extracted text and compared it to the original, and they were identical.
Yes, and as long as you're only doing text files and mm-hmm. only putting like maybe a handful or so per picture, it doesn't change the size enough to really throw people off either.
But
I used to play around with it, I stuck a picture in a picture. That really changes your size.
Yeah.
It doesn't change the picture, though.
No. Okay. The picture's still fine, but it really changes the size.
You know what, Matt, at your work, you're supposed to encrypt all your passwords. You know what you should do is hide the passwords inside a picture and then encrypt that. So if anybody decrypts it, they think it's just a picture.
I'll keep that in mind, Tony.
All right. Next up is...
See, I already figured out how you could fool the NSA, too, with that.
How?
Well, easy. Well, you kind of break stuff up, and you have diverse... So, in other words, you don't put the full text in one picture. It's just put out in different pictures on different forums. Might be an avatar. I mean, you just do it that way, and then they'd have to kind of... They'd have to know that that's been done, but if it's been done by different people who have... coordinated via snail mail about this.
Well, or even if it's done by different fictitious people, mm-hmm. it won't lead back to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Go to internet cafes. Wear an anonymous mask.
But don't use Tor.
Oh, yeah.
Because Tor is crackable, as in they can find
hackable?
Out who you find and out who you are and where you are connecting from. So it gives you a false sense of security. And... that's pretty much it.
All right. All right, we're back on track, Tony. Back to you.
All right, come on. We're on to the 18th with pfSense 2.2.1. And this is just a bug fix update. And if you're not sure what pfSense, I mean, we've talked about it a lot.
Yeah.
It's a firewall distro, and it's actually what I'm using for my router here.
Mm-hmm. Based on FreeBSD.
Exactly.
I thought we missed a distribution release.
No, we have not.
Yes, I think we did.
Oracle?
Yes.
Oh, well, continuing on, we have...
We did.
I guess, Oracle Linux 7.1.
I even missed them in my list of comments. Actually, we have a news item about them.
All right.
And it's not bad.solutions?
No. But has to do with the rebranding of Red Hat's material, including their kernel. What's the thing that it's like a little signature key or something like that? They just, instead of having, we'll talk about it in the news. But
I hate Oracle. Oracle and Ari Ellison need to die.
Oh, well, we, okay. All right, we're going to move on.
All right. Last on the list is came out yesterday. It was 3.21, and it's Neptune 4.3, which is just bug release fix updates.
Mm-hmm. For the most part. They said UEFI support will only work with GPT partition schemes and a FAT32 UEFI boot partition with the boot flag. Without secure boot enabled, if you got all that.
Right.
So yeah, I pulled that from a quick review of their site. So, so that's Neptune. But let's see, I was going to say something about pfSense. They said that you, as always, they said you can upgrade from any previous version straight to 2.2.1, which is this current release. So. For anyone running 2.2, they characterize that upgrade as a low risk upgrade. So apparently anything earlier than that might have a slightly greater risk.
Well, anytime you jump version numbers, you can really screw stuff up.
Yeah, that's true. I've experienced that firsthand.
Me too.
All right. So
I think anybody that uses Linux at some point in their life has experienced that.
Oh, yeah, wasn't recently, I think, maybe a couple of versions ago, I think I upgraded Kubuntu like right after it became available. I usually wait at least a few days to a week.
My philosophy is give it at least a month.
Yeah, and I didn't, and I had problems, and I said never again. So I'll wait at least 2 days. It's coming. This next release of Kubuntu is going to have the KDE Plasma 5. I'm looking forward
to
it.
Well, all right.
All right.
Okay, I guess we're moving on.
I'm moving on to the top five for this week. Starting off number five, we have Evolve with 1338.
And trending up. And that's kind of odd that we have a distro in there like Evolve that did not have a distro release.
Yeah.
It's a somebody gamed the system.
Must be.
I'm serious.
They're evolving the distro watch system now. Anyway, number four is Manjaro with 1369.
And trending down.
Number three is Debian with 1470.
And trending down.
Number two is Ubuntu with 1678.
And trending up.
And then in the number one spot is Mint.
Gotta love that minty goodness.
With 3606.
And trending up.
All right.
Well, actually, I think Evolve, and they are using the Budgie desktop. They're out of the UK. And I think they did have an update, I believe it was just a development release back last week, last Monday. So that's Ikey Doherty.
Hmm.
That's his baby.
Oh yeah,
that's
heard about
why
that.
They got that bump.
Yeah.
Because of him and the fact that it's a new distro. So.
That's right.
Cool.
All right. Next up, we have.
What distro are you reviewing this week, Mary?
Well, this week. You know, and I'm doing a mat. I don't even have it open. Just kidding. It's open now. This episode's review is of a remix of a major Linux distro. That major Linux distro is Fedora. The remix is Corora.
Ooh.
So would I adora Corora at the end of this review?
Fabulous and incredible partitioner.
Or would I abhorra Corora at the end of this review? Let's find out. Well, first the vitals. The name, this particular release is Corora 21, Darla. The maintainer is Chris Smart. He's the founder and lead developer of the project, and he's kind of the lead of the team. There's a team of four guys that, maintain this, plus other supporters. The distro's latest birthday was February 6, 2015. As I mentioned, it's a derivative of Fedora. The kernel in this particular release is 3.18.3, and the review desktop, although Corora supports the four major desktops, can anyone name them? Anyone? Anyone?
I see GNOME, KDE, LXDE, and XFCE.
LXDE is not a major.
Well, they're wrong.
I think I had cinnamon in there. But anyway, I chose the default GNOME 3.14 is what they had available. Now, getting Corora is as easy as answering a few simple questions on their website. The version, because you can still download Corora 20, the bit, whether it's 32 or 64 bit, and the preferred desktop. And the system requirements are also modest. You can have as low as 32-bit system, 1 gig of RAM, and 10 gigs of free space. But you can also get the 64-bit version. I think for my laptop, my testing laptop, I downloaded the 64-bit version. Now, Corora Live DVD boots to a polished GNOME 3 desktop. Corora has its own theme, which includes a very attractive set of icons compared to the standard GNOME approach. I have to say that I thought their icons were really nicely consistent and look great because they're circular and they've got a little picture that, you know, again, it's stylistic. It's very consistent across all of them. I just thought they did a very nice job on this. And I went to check to see what they were, and that's what they were. They're the Corora set.
Hmm.
because in GNOME, you'll have icons and they look nice, but they're not all circles. They might be, you know, like, VLC is just the little orange and white cone, that type of thing. These are all
because they're using VLC's logo.
They are, but they've got them all in little circles.
Yeah, well, Corora did.
Yeah,
when they
Corora
made their icon theme,
yeah,
they did that.
They did, and I thought it was very nice. The GNOME toolbar, notification panel, and activities are located in their standard positions, left, top, and right, respectively. A welcome dashboard greets you with several options, including documentation support and project. Now, of most interest to me were the new features, listing new features for the current release, Build Corora, which opened a browser to GitHub where Corora's packaging tool was located, so you can go ahead and roll your own if you want, if you've got the skill to do it. Finally, Install Corora was available to begin the install process. One note is after install, when I rebooted, that welcome screen no longer showed that install icon. So I'm also happy to report that I encountered no difficulty with the Broadcom wireless chip or graphics. So plus one for Corora. I had a wireless from the get-go once I installed it. So that was very nice. No drivers or any of that other kind of crap. The defaults, Firefox comes installed, although you can add Epiphany from the repositories. The Office suite is LibreOffice 4.3.5. The default mail client is Evolution. And the file manager is Files 3.14, which is the repackaged Nautilus.
Yeah. The choice of Evolution as the mail client shows their commitment to lightweight.
/sarcasm. but you can get Thunderbird, as I said, Epiphany, and other alternatives from the repositories. Now on to the install. Corora conveniently had an install icon on the left side toolbar, as well as the one on the welcome screen, as I previously noted. The first few steps are the typical ones for keyboard and localization. Then we come to partitioning. Corora uses Fedora's partitioning process. It's still not as polished and intuitive as I think it should be, and that's all I will say about it. I ended up using the whole disk because because
it makes sense and you just need to...
Yeah, you just need to give over your whole disk.
No,
to,
I have did. Several partitions and they're all fine.
Well, I had to get done with this by today, so I just gave up the whole thing. Let's see here. The rest of the install was smooth. I selected a username and password as well as a password for the root user. I appreciated not having to create that root user password after the install like I have to do with my Ubuntu-based system. In other words, once I...
Right.
You don't have a root password. You can't get to root unless you set that up.
Well, because and CentOS, too, during install, the only password that you have to give it is the root password. You don't have to create a... second user during the install.
Oh, let's see, these guys prompt for it.
I do, because there's a button to click to, mm-hmm. to do it.
Yeah.
And it's just, I've got to do something while it installs.
Yeah. Oh, but anyway, so the installed environment. Now, after the base install, I was cycled through some additional welcome configuration screens, including language and keyboard, which I thought I had already done during the install. So that was a little confusing.
Yeah, but no, see, and CentOS is that way, too.
Oh, it's for the user.
Exactly.
Oh,
it's,
okay.
No, it's for what it's using during the install.
Okay, I gotcha.
That's the first thing you do is you pick your language and your keyboard selection. It's for what it's going to use during the install. That's what that's for, at least in CentOS.
Huh, because that's interesting. Okay, well, that solves that little problem. So
yeah, because it makes sense to assume that you're not going to be using the same language you install the computer on, does it? Or you run the install for it? I don't know, you would think that you'd be able to grab those settings.
Tony is quiet, but he comes out with some really good observations.
They don't want to make assumptions. Because when you assume, you make an ass out of
you
and me.
Yeah.
And you were looking at Tony when you said that, right? All right. I'm going to get back to my little review.
All right.
let's see here. So, I already talked about cycle through those things, which we've agreed. I think we've all agreed that it was for the user.
Well, not the user, the...
what you said.
Yeah,
I agree. Then I was prompted to connect to my online accounts. Available options were Google, OwnCloud, Windows Live, Facebook. No thanks. The Getting Started dashboard let you launch applications, switch tasks, or respond to messages. List of common tasks were at the bottom, or a list of common tasks was at the bottom of the window. I discovered that the Minimize and Maximize buttons are off by default. Now, those buttons, of course, are the, you know, along the window frame there in the upper right corner.
Mm-hmm.
You could, it either opens or you close it. I think that was kind of crazy. what's up with that? I had to go to the Tweak Tool Utility, which is actually a nice little tool that gathers all those configuration things in one spot, under the Windows category to change this configuration. My guess is this was done to allow the side panels, you know, the toolbar on the left, and then that, I think the activities panel that slides out with your different desktops, on the right.
My vote is because it's GNOME, and GNOME sucks.
Well, the nice thing is you can change it, but my guess is that's probably why they did it. But the good news, as I said, you can change that, and I wasted no time in doing that. I want to spend a little time discussing the Documents app. First of all, Documents in the Places menu is different from Documents in the Toolbar. Documents in the Toolbar simply opens an instance of Files, the GNOME default file manager. But on the left toolbar, and when I say toolbar, I'm talking about at the top. That's the panel at the top. But on the left toolbar, Documents is actually GNOME Documents. It's a document manager that lets you display, organize, and print local documents, or those you created remotely using Google Docs, OwnCloud, or OneDrive. I decided to give it a spin and created two short documents locally in LibreOffice. After connecting my Google account and opening the local documents folder, I was able to see my Google Drive content as well as my local content. So that documents utility on the desktop displayed my Google stuff as well as my local stuff, which I thought was kind of cool.
Oh, that is neat.
Oh, yeah. That won't be confusing at all.
Well, no, you can tell. No. Here's the interesting thing is that there is a little emblem on each one that to which it applies. For example, I think I had shared something with you from my Google Drive a long time ago, and it showed a little share thing on it. And I think you were the person that it shared. It was pretty cool the way it was set up. I was impressed
with
it.
But if none of the documents are shared, then just by looking at the icons, can you tell which one is on Google Docs and which one is on your hard drive?
Yeah.
Okay. Not as bad as I originally assumed.
Okay. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I could by name.
Oh, jeez.
No, I think so. You know, I'd have to go back and take a look at that. That's a great question, though, Matt. And unfortunately, I didn't take a mental picture of that so I can report on it.
You just got sucked into the shiny, Mary.
I did. The shiny object on the shiny object on the side of the path. I was there picking that little penny up. But anyway, so let's see here. So after connecting my Google, so I went back and connected my Google account, as you probably surmised. Let's see, I was able to see my Google Drive content as well as my local content. However, I could not view locally created content and documents because this library or this file, UnoConv, that's UnoConv, was not installed. Now, this surprised me because UnoConv is a command line. It's a command line utility to convert for export or import any document format that LibreOffice can handle. To me, that should have already been installed because LibreOffice was installed and this documents viewer or this manager was already installed. After all, it's required for GNOME documents, but GNOME documents prompted me to install it. Regardless of the password I used, either my user password or roots, it refused to install from the graphical interface. I had to open a terminal window and run install from there as root. Yum. Install. UnoConv. Yum. I just think that's crazy.
Yeah, I have sudo yum install alias to the word install. So yeah. As my local user, I can just say install and then program and bang, it's
nice.
Done.
Very nice. Yeah. So I always crack up when I go, yum, install. Anyway, but I did that from a root terminal. I rebooted like a Windows monkey and I was ready to test real time on the fly, immediate rsync type document updating. For the test, I opened a Google Drive document that, was also available locally in Documents. Any change I made on the local copy on the left side. So basically what happens, I had the document open on my Google Drive and locally.
Right, you had it open in the Google Docs.
Yes.
So it was open in Google Docs, and it was open on your local drive.
Yes. And here's what is so cool, is any change I made here showed up here.
How long was the lag?
Any change, probably about, I'd say, maybe 2 seconds.
That's not bad. That's pretty good.
Yeah, and any change you made over here showed up over here. And for those of you who are only listening, I was gesturing
with
my right hand and my left hand. I think you probably get the picture, is that whatever change I made on the Google Drive document showed up in the GNOME Documents version.
And vice versa.
Yes, exactly. So I was very impressed with that.
That's pretty impressive.
It was. It was. Let's see here. So anyway, but this particular functionality has been available since GNOME 3.8. Now, after connecting my Google Plus account, whenever I booted the desktop, notifications alerted me for my calendar and all sorts of stuff, which is kind of convenient if, you know, that's what you want to do. So, now, as far as interesting programs, Corora prefigured several third-party repositories so users can install additional software such as Adobe Flash, Dropbox, Google Chrome, RPM Fusion, which I've never heard of.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with it?
I don't know. I don't know if I have it on my laptop or not, but like on my servers, mm-hmm. the only extra repository that I install other than I install the three CentOS ones, the mm-hmm. for base and extras, and I forget what the updates I think is the other one.
Yeah.
And then I install EPL. And other than that, I don't really.
Yeah, because their base repository set includes the Fedora repositories, which I think has got like over 1,700 packages. They've got the RPM Fusion, which has 51. And then the Corora's own, which has 36, and then they've got Adobe just for the Flash, and that's just one package in there. But programs of interest included that are included with the base install included the Fedora Live USB Creator. Are you familiar with that, Matt? I was kind of impressed with it because yeah. it is a creator. Live creator, USB creator from Live Fedora Images. You've got a choice of versions for workstation, servers, net install, I guess the scientific version really just comes focused with scientific type packages, like math, you know, that kind of stuff. Anyway, games, robotics. Now it's available for both 32 and 64-bit systems. Very impressive. Handbrake is already installed in Corora. I thought that was not, well, I like that. And it's kind of.
I have never used it.
Oh, I've used it. I've taken my DVDs and I've taken the DVD movies and put them on little discs to travel.
I'm not a movie guy.
Well, then that would be something for you. But what I like about it, is that they've already taken care of the libDVD CSS2, I think, those underlying dependencies that have to be added. They've taken care of all of that. So that's very nice. Something called Farlap. That's Corora's driver manager. It was originally based on Ubuntu's Jockey, but when it was deprecated, the Corora project took the code and then modified it for Corora and then kind of ran with it. So, and Farlap is actually was the name of a racehorse. It scans your hardware in order to identify drivers and packages that match and then gives you options. So, then there's something called... One thing about open source software sometimes are the names. The Globus Preview. Are you familiar with that?
No.
Globus Preview is a GNOME application. Oh, that's GNOME app, that's why. It's based on Apple's Quick Look, enabling a full-screen preview of any kind of file. I mean, they support all your common image extensions, your common document extensions, also source code like C++, Java, JavaScript, PHP, Python.
Shell script?
SH?
That's shell script.
There you go. Audio, your MP3, AUG, etc., video, and then other... Others, like plain text, TFF. I don't know what that is.
TIFF. Is it TIFF? That's a image TFF. Format.
TFF.
Oh, TIFF is TIF.
TIF, that's it. Yeah, those were the first images that I worked with way back in the day when we did image scanning at work. They had a full array, I should say, of graphics apps. And they had something called Eekboard, which, of course, is an on-screen keyboard, so that will thwart any keylogger that may be installed on your system. OpenShot is already installed, which I thought was kind of nice.
Now, the on-screen keyboard, it obviously worked mm-hmm. with mouse clicks on the individual keys,
mm-hmm.
but what if you have a touchscreen monitor? Will it allow you to touch the keys?
You know, I was unable to test that because I don't have a touchscreen monitor. And I would leave little fingerprints all over my monitor. I don't know. I'm not sure. Huh. Well, I'll look into that.
And would it, if you touched it instead of using the mouse,
yeah.
would that then defeat the keylogger? Because it's still passing the key press to the API somehow, right?
Yeah, well,
And how does it defeat the keylogger?
I think that's
an
opportunity
place?
For a security bet sometime in the future. I'm gonna punt that off to Tony.
She wants to move along and shut me up.
You know, it only defeats physical keyloggers. Because there's software keyloggers, right, and that, taking input, so it's still wanting that. Because
it's still got to pass the key press to the API.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
So if it's a software keylogger, it's not going to defeat anything.
Exactly.
Mm. Okay.
All right. It also has, getting back to Carora's programs, it also has something called Pomodoro. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
The Pomodoro
Sounds
technique.
Sounds like a hairdo.
It does. It doesn't, or a little dog, or that's Pomeranian. The Pomodoro technique is a time management method which uses a timer to break down work into intervals traditionally 25 minutes in length, separated by short breaks. So those intervals are known as pomodori's, which is, I guess, plural for the Italian word for tomato. Now, it should not be confused with the Tomichadoro method, which separates breaks into 25-minute lengths, interspersed with short bursts of work.
That's my method. I thought that was the Ender's method.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it's there too. It also has a section for problem reporting, and this is really a collection of software tools for analyzing and reporting of software issues. I opened the app, and it has a two-panel interface, which I suspect operates similar to a hierarchy. On the left side would be the main category, and on the right, maybe the sub-category or details. It'll also designate whether there's a system or whether it's a system or user problem, although I did not see the word PEBCAC anywhere. All I saw was no problems detected notice.
At the end of every shift, whoever's doing monitoring at where I work has to send what's called a monitoring report to, we have sent it to the help desk, the ESG, and to several groups inside. And I actually had PEBCAC in my monitoring for once. Because it was my PEBCAC.
That's funny. That's funny. All right. And then finally, there's an SE Linux troubleshooter, which is really a graphical user interface to help diagnose SE Linux policy problems and other related matters. Now, aside from the few minor annoyances I noted, I found Carora to be a very capable distro for anyone wanting a Fedora experience. With some of that work done for you. In other words, some of the install work of Flash and some of those other things all taken care of so you don't have to deal with it. And that's really what they say on their website was the intent of the project. So I give Carora 3.2 cups of coffee. So it was good.
All right.
It was good.
Did we ever figure out what these cups of coffees were out of?
No. Fine Colombian.
No.
Picked by Juan Valdez.
I mean a number like...
Roasted over a little campfire.
Are they out of 10?
Oh, it's out of 5.
Are they out of 4?
Yeah, it's out of 5.
Okay.
Yeah, if you're above 2.5, you're okay.
All right.
I think what was the lowest I gave? 2.1 to something.
No, I've seen you give zeros, I thought.
Oh, maybe there was one once. All right. So anyway, that is this week's Linux, or this episode's Linux Distro.
Well, all right.
Yeah. All right, and we're going on to...
It's time for the tech news of the week.
The news this week. All right, so I found a couple articles, but it's more security related. What did you find, Mary?
I have got... let me tell you what I have. I'm pulling... Actually, I had it up here, but I'm trying to open about three websites. I have got one... Linux's worst case scenario, Windows 10 makes secure boot mandatory, locks out other operating systems.
Yeah. Granted, it wasn't like an official announcement, but it was on an official slide from an official presentation. You know, there was a line that said that they were intended to do this. And, from what I read about it, it sounded like it was.
I think manufacturers have the option to not include, in other words, to still provide the option.
They all want that Windows certified sticker, and they're not going to get it unless they do it. But what it does is makes a check, because they're also offering free upgrades from Windows 7 and Windows 8 to Windows 10. And there are some Windows 7 machines out there. I don't know if any Windows 8 machines, but there are Windows 7 machines out there on hardware that doesn't have UEFI. So if it doesn't have it, how can you upgrade? How can you run Windows 10 if it doesn't have UEFI? Well, what I think they're going to do, this is, again, just supposition between myself and some people online.
You and your other personalities.
some people online that I've been reading, that they're probably going to institute a check where it checks for UEFI, and if the hardware is UEFI enabled, will require you to use UEFI. But if it's not UEFI enabled,
what I mean? Yeah, I think I know what you mean. So you then would still have a little more flexibility.
Right.
It seems to me this would be probably a boon for laptop manufacturers like System 76.
Exactly.
And ZowReason.
Exactly, because new hardware, obviously, all is UEFI, so it will all be locked down. So you'll have, I won't be running a Dell anymore. I'll have to be running like a System 76 or a ZowReason.
Mm-hmm.
That Mary already is running.
Yep. That's right. Yeah. With PCBSD. So,
well,
yeah.
I think IX systems, too, might make laptops, not just servers. But I may be wrong.
I know they make servers.
You know, they have this funny thing called the internet.
You're going to go check on that.
I am.
All right. Well, do you want me to move on while you look?
Yes.
Okay. The other news item I had, this came out, almost a week ago, but I still found it kind of interesting, is that Oracle, and we touched on this during the distro, our distro updates, our distro releases, Oracle adds secure-ish boot support to its Linux distro. But how secure is it?
Secure-ish.
Yeah. Well, apparently, it includes.
IX Systems only does servers. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I was wrong.
That's all right. What was that? You were wrong?
I was wrong.
All right. Anyway, this Oracle, this Oracle Linux distro includes something called kexec_load, which what it does is it will load a new kernel from the current address space. Now, the reason why that's kind of important is because what they did here, and again, there'll be a link to this in the show notes, they basically took...
Case place?
No. They took the only kernel Oracle will supply with any meaningful security is the one that's just a direct copy of the Red Hat kernel source. And they also copied the Red Hat key, I think, and just renamed it Oracle 301. Now, the 301 happened to be the name of the key. It was its serial number, the Red Hat serial number version. They just, again, they must have like a global find and replace.
Yeah, they just, you know, Oracle is just horrible. Larry Ellison is a horrible human being.
Yeah, but what'll happen is that this kexec_load can take another kernel and kind of shove it in there. And so that is a security flaw.
Well, caseplace does that.
Oh, maybe that's, well, I don't know what caseplace is.
And then starting with Linux kernel 4.0, which is the next one coming.
Yeah.
You
can just replace the good kernel with the broken kernel, own the system, and then kexec into the backdoored good kernel. So, anyway. So it just goes to show you, I'm not sure what, but it shows you something.
I don't know.
So, that was my one, that was my second news item. And then the last one I have is, this is from the, is that an oxymoron or are you just unhappy to see me department? We have this, the Senate Intelligence Committee. That's.
Is that an oxymoron?
Yeah. Advance is terrible. And then they, had cybersecurity bill. They crossed that out and put surveillance bill in secret session. And they kept a secret until I think like last Tuesday night when, Senator Richard, Burr, he kept the bill secret, yeah, until Tuesday night, when it finally, I think, went out into this, this committee meeting. But the problem with it is there are a couple of countermeasures and monitoring powers, and aside from its redundancy, sorry, I'm kind of jumping here. Let me just retrace. The Senate Intelligence Bill grants two new authorities to companies. They first will be able to launch countermeasures called defensive measures against a cybersecurity threat. Now, this is the cybersecurity purpose and threat is so broadly defined that you can kind of slice it and dice it almost any way you want, and thus broaden the ability to go out there and monitor and pull in data. The second thing is that it adds this new authority for companies to monitor information systems to protect an entity's hardware or software. Again, the broad definition, and I got this from the EFF.org website. Again, it's a very broad, and some of these had already been defined in a 2012 measure, rule of law. But they, EFF.org thought they should have really just used the language that had already been clearly defined. Instead, they kind of come back with this because they want to really broaden it out. And I really think what they're trying to do is kind of partner with companies so that will undermine the company's reticence to provide this data to government requests. In other words, you know, you kind of get chummy and then you're more inclined to give this stuff up. I mean, it's just, it's bothersome to me. It's just, you know, again, an overbroad use of information. I mean, that's the concern.
All interrogators use that technique. Mm-hmm. Police do that. When they pull you over and they give you that ticket, they're all friendly and want to talk to you. Bullshit. Just don't talk to them. Keep your mouth shut.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I still got the ticket though. Remember that ticket?
You'll
I got.
Still get the
I was on
tickets.
The way to the. I was on the way to record.
You're going to get the ticket anyway.
When we were in, yeah.
Okay.
I did.
You will. You will get it anyway.
It didn't go to my insurance company though. I had to pay $110 to go through this online driving course.
Last time
I passed.
Last time I got a ticket from a cop. He started asking me all these questions. I said, I don't answer questions. He goes, okay, I'll write it down for you.
Oh, anyway, but, so those are my, news items.
All right. I found a few, like I said, they were, more security related. One of them is no browsers is secure. All major browsers are hacked at 2015 Pwn to Own contest.
Yep, the Pwn to Own, everything fell.
Yeah, I posted that.
The major
just
ones.
Today. I just saw that, yeah.
Yeah, so...
who was first to
Firefox?
Go down?
Firefox.
I think IE was the first to go down, weren't they?
No, they're. I thought they're sunsetting IE, aren't they?
Well, it's not going to be called IE anymore,
Spartan?
But it's still going to be IE.
Well, actually, everything I heard, it's full new code.
Oh,
it's
really? Not... Whose code did they steal, I wonder?
That one, I don't know.
Huh.
Yeah.
That would be good to know.
Yeah. But my, it says in here, the victims are Safari on OS X, Chrome on Windows, Firefox on Windows, and less surprisingly, Internet Explorer on Windows.
All of them on Windows.
I was just going to say, all on Windows.
Yep. And it does go on to say that no browser exploits were successfully demonstrated on Linux or other open source operating systems.
Oh, shocker.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah. Oh, okay. So, there you go.
But what's interesting is, one guy, Young Hoon, J-U-N-G is how you say his first name.
Young.
Yeah, Young Hoon.
Young Hoon Lee.
All right. But his largest prize was $225,000.
Wow.
It's because he demonstrated a bug in Chrome on Windows and another one in Chrome Beta and Internet Explorer and Apple Safari. So all of them combined, you know, came up with that prize.
Wow. I mean, you could, that's...
I'm in the wrong business.
2 or 3 years, salary, just
that's a year. Now he's
just
gotta
sit around and play with computers for a year and then show up at Pwn to Own and be really good.
I have a feeling though that he does a lot of studying and stuff.
Well, you'd have to.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And if you did that as a full-time job, but you get paid once a year, you know, I mean,
I could do it. I could live and pay me $225 once a year. I think I could make that work.
Yeah. You can set it up so that it sits in this account, but then it gets, there's a direct deposit into your checking account every 2 weeks, and that's how you do it.
Yeah. They said though, one browser that it's popular, but just not the biggest one that was not exploited was Opera.
I use Opera.
I got Opera installed here. Opera, and I've said this before and I'll say it again, Opera was the first browser to use tabs.
Okay.
They also said that the Chinese researchers did do additional exploits on Internet Explorer 11 through Firefox or through Flash.
Oh, I'm not surprised.
Flash is buggy still.
Yeah.
Which is going away. Anyway, so I thought that was interesting. And then as a follow-up, Mozilla releases Firefox 36.0.3 to patch security vulnerabilities disclosed at Pwn to Own. So update your Firefox if that's what you use.
Okay. So Opera was not cracked.
And this is what's awesome about open source software is that Pwn.own was last week, and Firefox has already taken those and fixed and has a new version.
Well, IE has a fix out, right?
Nope, not yet.
Mad. You're mean. You know, and it's funny you say that, Tony, because on Friday, you know, I have a Windows system I use, you know, for my financial market software during the day. There was an update, Firefox update on Friday afternoon or at some point on Friday, I think it was for that. I'm sure it's for that. I didn't realize it at the time, though.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I bet the IE updates will come patch Tuesday in like 2 months.
It'll be I'll like check. May,
if, patch yeah. Tuesday. If, yeah.
Hey, if then, else.
All right. And then
else if.
Or ELIF. E-L-I-F.
Yeah, ELIF. That's it, ELIF.
Python.
It means it. That's what it in Bash, too, but it means okay. Else if.
Well, that's good to know. I might be also learning Bash and not even know it.
Maybe. Loops are pretty much loops, and if statements are pretty much if statements. So
yeah, a lot of the basics or the theory behind programming is common across them all.
Right. Mm-hmm. So once you have a really solid grasp on the basics, actually learning the other languages aren't pretty difficult.
Yeah, and the
it's all syntax from there.
Yeah, not to digress too much, but the focus of this course is informatics, which is, you know, pulling information and processing information. So which I kind of like. And so I'm hoping I do well.
All right.
There you go.
Halfway through or over halfway through. So.
All right.
Yeah. And then the last one I found, is how to encrypt cloud storage files and folders in Linux. So.
And how, Tony? Pray tell how.
Well, it goes on and says, why should you do this? And obviously most everybody that listens to us knows. You know, but most cloud services don't encrypt it at all. And if they do, they encrypt it on their drive. So any traffic between you and them is the file itself is not encrypted.
Right.
It might have a tunnel that's encrypted.
Mm-hmm.
But they can still decrypt it.
Yep, they
and
can
hand it
so
off.
So your data is not safe.
That's right.
And that's why Tarsnap is so good. The encryption is done on the local machine.
Yeah.
Yeah, Spider Oak does that too.
So but, that they at Tarsnap they can't decrypt anything, and if they get that subpoena, all they can say is, "Yeah, he has this much data here, and this is when he connected."
Yeah,
and I don't have the key.
Well, and you can actually this tutorial walks you doing the same thing with, and you can still use the Google Drive or Dropbox or what you do, but you encrypt it first, and then tell Google Drive or your cloud service to then sync that encrypted drive or folder. And it uses...
At what level does that encryption occur again? I'm sorry, Tony.
It encrypts it on your laptop before it's synced up to the cloud.
Right, but if you've got... If my Dropbox folder is 50 gigabytes, it will encrypt all 50 gigabytes and then sync the whole thing? Or does it encrypt at the file level?
The initial.
And then just...
It encrypts the file level. Like, individual files are encrypted.
Oh, okay. Okay. Which, to me, makes... on the face of it, makes more sense, I guess.
Yeah, so if you change one file,
because I would
it changes
wanna, I,
one.
I might want to encrypt, you know, my healthcare records, but I really could care less about encrypting my grocery list.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, no, I think what Mary was...
How long is that grocery list?
Was it one big
Quite
container?
Long.
Like... Is it? All right. And what Mary's question though is, is individual files encrypted or is it one big container that has to be, synced each time? Like, is it a 50 gig file that's being updated or individual files?
Right.
You know, small files.
I was just thinking about
your grocery list.
Right.
No, CPU cycles. Doing the encryption. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be pretty busy. That would be an excuse to upgrade the RAM. I need 8 gigs of RAM.
That doesn't really help with CPU cycles.
Oh, you're right. Oh, you're right. You know, I do know that.
Anyway,
what I was thinking.
So this article goes through saying it uses ENCFS or EncryptFS.
Oh, okay. I've heard of that.
And unlike other encryption programs, it creates two folders. In that folder will have your decrypted which is, don't worry, it is still inaccessible, and the second folder will have the encrypted files. And then it goes through apt-get install for Debian-based systems.
That's good.
And then you have that encrypted folder is what you sync with Dropbox.
So a link to that will be in the show notes.
It is. Yeah, so it's cool. Neat stuff.
Okay.
And that's everything I found.
Cool beans, dude.
Okay. Is that your security update, too?
Yes.
Oh. Wow.
So now it's KDE Corner.
Yes, and I actually, oh my gosh, I didn't put it in here.
it's here.
why don't you just mention it?
And the KDE Corner this episode is going to be on President Lydia Pinscher on the role of a nonprofit in open source development.
Yes, I'm glad you said that. Okay, I know what it is now.
Okay.
Yeah, and actually it was a good article because it talked about the KDE, I call it a foundation. And that's the vehicle for fundraising, for kind of, quote unquote marketing and getting the word out for a lot of the admin kinds of functions so that the KDE project itself could just focus on the stuff it does best. And, she also talks about the role of women in open source software. And, it's always, I think it would be good to have a little more.
And, I saw a great article on that. Not necessarily an article. I think it was more of like an op-ed where we talked about women in tech are the canary in the coal mine. And
really?
They're the equivalent of the canary in a coal mine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The purpose of the canary in the coal mine is to let you know when the environment is becoming toxic. The canary dies.
Okay.
When the canary dies, in the canary in a coal mine scenario, you don't replace the canary, you get the F out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah,
'cause it's not healthy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But in tech, all these women are leaving tech or not even coming into tech, and tech solution is lean in. Just get more women in here.
canaries.
Yeah, exactly. They're not fixing the problems. Mm-hmm. Just bring more women in, And that's not the problem is not the lack of women. The problem is why
the environment.
Are women being a lack?
The root cause.
Right. Why is there a lack of women? What is the root cause of that?
Right.
And it's the toxic environment. It's not the fact that there aren't enough canaries.
That's a good point. But anyway, so that's what I found very interesting about the article, was, she talked about that. And,
right. I was just wondering if she happened to touch on that aspect or if she didn't touch on that at all.
She didn't go into the detail.
Was she on the
bandwagon? She was interviewed by Linux.com, I think it was.
Right, but was she just on the bandwagon of, yes, we need to get more women and and not fix the problems to draw more women in? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was just wondering which camp she was in, if they'd even asked that question.
I don't think they asked it in that fashion, but there was something I was going to say, and I just forgot.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mary.
I know. Happens more and more.
Doesn't
it was
to
kind
us
of related
all.
To no, it was kind of related to this. It's floating there. I can just kind of see it. I can see it, but I can't reach through the cloud. Yeah. All right. So, I guess what we'll do is if it suddenly occurs to me, we'll
just
circle back.
Just blurt it out.
Oh, yeah, I remember what it was. Because that does happen occasionally. Well, I guess what we'll go ahead and do is move on to...
Where is it? There it is.
Now it's time for Mary's quiz show. Is it alive?
Yes. Is it alive?
Is it alive?
I just knew that I always like to overload myself on the weeks that I have the distro review. And yeah, I'm going to do the game show this week.
It's because you get in that mode of actually, working, doing something.
Exactly. So anyway, is it alive or is it dead? Now that is going to give you a clue. This is not a twist week. We're going back. We're going retro.
Oh, straight up, is it alive?
Legacy or retro, yes. So during this segment of the show, I challenge Matt and Tony to identify whether a Linux distro is alive or dead. Now, sometimes I do twist the concept, and I think I've done that a couple times in a row, so I thought, time to return to the roots. The distro roots.
All right.
Time to return to root. slash. as I said, this week is not a twist week. So the question is straight up. Is this name distro alive or dead? And there's no extra credit. So you're going to have to be on your toes. Mm. Okay, the first one is called GNU Linux Utopia.
Alive.
Dead.
It's alive.
Yes.
All right. Next one is Tux Hat Linux.
Dead.
Dead.
It's alive. Ooh. It's alive. Tux Hat Linux is an Arch-based... I forgot to tell you. Linux Utopia is a distribution based on Slackware. It also uses the Enlightenment as the principal desktop. And then Tux Hat Linux is an Arch-based distro using the KISS principle. That was a big sloppy kiss. No, just kidding. So,
keep it simple.
Yeah. So anyway, I'll have a link to it. So anyway, so what's the score?
It would be
1-0.
1-0.
All right. The next one is Unidocky Naps.
Dead.
Dead.
It's alive.
Oh, Jesus.
I know. It's an Ubuntu. It's not that old either. It's an Ubuntu custom homemade distro for VirtualBox users and audio groups. So that's kind of a diverse... diverse audience for this distro, but it's based on Ubuntu 12.04, so they haven't updated it yet, but you can still download it, and it still shows as alive. The next one is Drbl, D-R-B-L, and that stands for...
Yeah.
We say alive.
Yeah.
I know Tony what it said is. Queuing off Matt's excitement.
I know what it is, and I've used it, but I actually think it's dead. It's a live-run distro, right?
It's a diskless remote boot in Linux.
Yes.
It's alive.
Ah, son of a bitch.
It's free software, open source solution for managing the deployment of GNU Linux.
I can't even draw now.
All right. The next one is called Vector in Pup.
Dead.
Dead.
It's alive.
Oh, my God. She didn't have one freaking dead distro.
We got one more
is that
here.
The last one? Oh, okay.
Yeah, we got one more. Yeah, this is a Vector in Pup is a cross between Vector Slackware Linux packages and Slacko Puppy Linux. It's good on old and new PCs. So I got a link to that particular distro, and it's alive, as I said. All right, the last one is RLSD, Retro Linux Libre Software Distribution.
Dead.
Alive.
It's got to be dead.
It's alive.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a live GNU Linux Libre distro.
I don't think I've
retro
ever been
applications.
Skunked. Have I ever been skunked before? Did you ever skunk me before?
No, but you've been a skunk. yeah, so it revives old hardware and the way computing used to be in the late 90s. So it's kind of retro, but it's alive.
And I got skunked.
Yeah, it respects users' freedom. And, you know, again, you can use it on 64-bit and x86. So... yeah, so that's Retro Linux Libre Software. So join us. Well, I guess I'm going to announce the winner. The winner is Tony. Tone Man. Mr. T.
Yes.
All right.
Skunked me.
He did. Man, I'm kind of surprised.
I am shocked.
I actually tried to find dead ones, but all the ones I were finding were alive, and I kind of liked the name, you know, like Tux Hat, Drbl. And then I thought Unidoc Naps. They're going to think it's dead because it's such an odd name. But it's actually Unidocky. Oh, you know what I did? I left off the Y. That would have probably changed it.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Unidocky next.
Out of one. I call for a rematch.
It's a custom homemade distro for... Oh, I
it totally threw me off my game when you left that Y off, Mary.
It uses Docky. Could you guess?
Yeah.
But anyway, so join us next time. Not next episode, but next time for another edition of Is It Alive? All right, I'm sure we sound better than that canned music.
All right. Well, that was a good one.
Yeah, I bet you think it was.
All right,
you're still smiling.
Yeah, going on.
It's listener feedback time.
And our phone number is 734-258-7009.
So, Trucker Rich, write it down.
That's right. You can also email us at show@smlr.us. Mm-hmm. Show@smlr.us. And we also have a listener feedback forum, a feedback forum on our page, not what forum, page? Forum.
F-O-R-M.
F-O-R-M.
And you can also, right. If you respond to our G Plus posts, we will also include that.
Yeah, that's right.
And yeah, we got quite a we got a fair amount of listener feedback, and we got a donation.
I think
we need to start off things with our donation.
That's right.
So, do you have that handy, Tony?
I do.
Or Matt? And I want to thank because we were that will just help defray the cost of our spacious, expansive backdrop for YouTube.
Right. It was a donation from Bill and Denise from Philly.
That's
and
right.
And it was a substantial donation.
Yes,
I think
thank
it was our biggest donation
much.
To date, right?
To date, that's
yes,
right.
Yes, our largest donation to date. And we want to thank them very much.
Mm-hmm.
And just thank you.
Yep.
Do it again.
Yep. Yeah. It will be spent wisely for various hardware things for the show.
We were recently just talking about some hardware upgrades, too. So
yeah.
So
that'll come in handy.
It will.
And,
so thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And they wanted us to also point out how easy it is for the rest of you. We have a button right on our webpage that you click it, put a number in PayPal, and whammo bammo, you have donated.
The more zeros you put, the better, though.
Yes. a nice-sized first number is not bad either.
Yeah, that's true. No, anything will be gratefully accepted.
Yes,
we're grateful to these guys.
So, Bill and Denise from Philly. Thank you very much.
Friends of the show.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
All right. And then...
Xander emails us.
Okay.
He says to watch the Apple engineer talk about the new 2015 MacBook.
I missed that, post.
I didn't have that one either.
Did he send it to me?
He must have sent it
to the show? Or?
I don't think he didn't send it to the show or I'd have gotten it. I get it all now that you changed my...
Actually, this was like the day before I changed that.
Okay.
Yeah, he sent it to show. And I didn't watch it. I'm sorry, Xander.
He promises
I've heard some
he
really
will
good
watch it.
But if
it.
I'd have gotten it, I'd have watched it, Xander. Yeah. Just so you know.
That's right.
So Tony's assignment is to watch it over the next couple of weeks and report back during next episode's listener feedback.
Yeah.
The other one we got too was from Trent. This is just wanted to share some alternative ways to get VirtualBox working on the server. What I do is build the VM on my desktop, then export the OVA and SCP the OVA file over to the server. Either set up the VM completely or create a base image and clone it on the server with VBox manage commands. And exporting the VirtualBox GUI works okay too. So I think we had talked about that. We had last episode.
On a server, if you're going to use VMs and stuff like that, I don't use VMs. I'm not a big fan of VMs. Although I am looking into jails a little bit. I think I'm going to try to do something with jails. I'm not sure what, but I don't think I would have the graphical installed on a server. That's I have yet to install X11 on any server I've ever installed. So,
and that's probably because, you know, you're quite handy at the command line.
Well, I don't think any of it. Have you ever installed X on any server you've installed, Tony?
I have once, because to get, the VMware, running on it. And, it was, because it required X, but then you can just tell, in the startup, you can tell it not to start X. It's available to run, but it doesn't run at start. So only if you get in and you say start X, it actually launches and starts using the RAM. And I believe it might be that VirtualBox requires X just to install.
Really?
Also,
that's a horrible requirement, though. The disk space alone...
Yeah.
That it requires. I mean,
disk space is cheap.
Maybe, but it still annoys me that I have to give it to something I'm never going to use.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's good stuff.
Yep. So that was from Trent, and that came in via Google Plus.
All right.
All right.
So
well,
we have two more left, And Matt, you were emailing back and forth with this other guy. Do you want
to?
Yeah, somebody took, I think, just let me preface your comments, Matt, with just, I think this stemmed out of our conversation in the last episode about licensing.
Yes.
And I think it came out of the whole VMware suit discussion.
Where I expressed my opinion about the GPL.
Yeah, and that was purely, wasn't the opinion of the show. That's
not
Matt,
the opinion of the show, Matt not Andrew's the opinion of my employer. It's my opinion that the GPL is oppressive.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you're welcome to disagree with me. But when you take the route of this commenter and disagree with me by referring to my comments and equating to them with terrorism, you're unbalanced, sir, and we won't be using your name.
But I think, but just to kind of bring it back to more in the center, what I really appreciate about open source software are the choices and the kinds of licenses you can use. You can use the least restrictive licenses, like the BSD licenses, and I think
there's
a two-paragraph.
Well, that's not the least restrictive.
There's a two-paragraph
there
BSD.
The least restrictive license is going to
no
be
no license.
No, it would be because that's not really a license. But the WFTPL is my favorite license.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. The last two are public license, and then
yes.
Okay, I got you. I've not heard of that one.
Yes. And Mary, actually, if there's no license, it defaults to full rights reserved, so nobody can do anything with your code at that point if there's no license.
Really?
On it. Yeah.
Oh. Okay. I was unaware of that. Probably because I don't write code for public consumption.
And then there are there's the four, the three, and the two clause BSD licenses.
Mm-hmm. And then there's the MIT, the Apache.
Yep.
Tons of them. So I think really the bottom line is if you're a developer.
And they all have, except for the WFTPL, all have their degree of oppressiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing is not oppressive to a completely 100% degree, and the GPL is very oppressive, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. And that's Matt's opinion.
It is my opinion.
My opinion is you got choice, and if you don't like the provisions of the GPL, then there are perhaps another license that will suit you. So anyway, and that's the nice thing about open source software. And by the way, too, I just wanted to mention that if you Google open source license types, you'll come up with some really good websites that will kind of walk you through the hierarchy, the pros and cons of
and it
various.
Lays them all out and tells you how to. And
if you are looking for this kind of thing, then these licenses are more to your liking.
The three clause and two clause both have their own websites with color graphics that to explain the license very well. I couldn't find one for BSD four clause, but it's
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, don't sue us, and just keep this copyright thing in there.
It's used so, the four clause is used so little now that it's not really pertinent.
But. Anyway, so I appreciated the opportunity to talk about the licenses and just to show how broad, you know, how lucky we are that there are these choices that we've got in the open source community.
Yes.
So, all right.
Yeah.
What other user or listener feedback do we have?
I still have two more.
Okay, go ahead, Matt.
Which one do you have, Tony? So that
Julian came, that we mentioned earlier.
Okay, because I also have one from Toby.
I don't see that.
That's because it came in, and he says, "Oh no, this one we've had for a while." It says, "Another super show. Keep up the great work, guys. I particularly like how much attention you devote to the BSDs. Top notch."
Oh.
Hey.
All right. Well, I am going to take that as my marching orders.
Oh, you know why, Tony? It was he replied to my repost of your post about the last episode.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good, though. I'm going to, Oh, and you know, just speaking of BSDs, BSD Now Podcast, and I'm just going to give them a little bump here.
Only listen to them after you've listened to us.
Yeah, that's right. Only listen to them. That's really a great BSD podcast. Co-hosts Chris Moore and Alan Jude cover the gamut.
Yeah, I really like Alan Jude.
Yeah,
I follow him on Twitter. He's pretty
cool. He's very he seems very intelligent. Because he probably is. But anyway, I really like that podcast. They appeal to, I think, kind of a broad base of BSD users, developers, and then just plain users like me, although I'm kind of a newbie user. So, but yeah, I think maybe I'll Maybe I'll have a little BSD thing next time.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what I tried to do once, though? And then I realized it was a crazy project to take on. In a calc spreadsheet.
There you go. LibreOffice Calc. She meant to say LibreOffice Calc.
It was, too. In a calc spreadsheet, I had pasted the entire file structure hierarchy for FreeBSD, and then for Linux, I did it in a second one. And what I wanted to do was to then kind of talk about the similarities and differences. And then I realized, oh, this is a bigger project than I thought.
And there's also a POSIX
standard.
Right, mm-hmm. File System Hierarchy Standard.
Which I've not really looked at.
Include, though, and also say how they
Oh, the you know, that would be an interesting project, really, because POSIX is more kind of the pure Unix standard, right?
Well, it is.
I mean, it's the
Unix standard.
Yeah. Oh, I think that would be kind of an interesting project. Oh, maybe I'll put that right behind my Linux from scratch project.
So it's got that same kind of priority there.
Yeah.
All right.
No, I think it would be kind of interesting. The problem is that you can go into a directory and into another level because there may be some notable information in that directory structure down to a subdirectory, blah blah blah. So my point is that you could almost go down the rabbit hole after all this stuff and end up with this huge voluminous project. We wouldn't want to do that. So. But I will take this on.
I might beat you to that. Once I get done with, after PenguinCon, when my life returns to a little semblance of normalcy, I might take that on.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting. All right. So what do we got now?
Well, just a little bit of announcement about that PenguinCon again. We're going to be having Kevin on next week.
Next episode? Ooh.
Next episode, not next week.
And our episode is going to change because our normal day.
The live recording will be on Saturday. Right.
Yeah.
Because the
Easter Bunny.
that Sunday is a Judeo-Christian holiday.
That's right.
That is to be unnamed.
It's not Easter. Judeo, it's just Christian. The Judeos, they celebrate Passover.
Exactly. So. Which happens at the same time.
Close, but not always on the same time.
It should always be on the same time because they happened at the same time.
All right. There you have it. Our religion lesson. But anyway, just to reiterate, we'll be doing our live recording on Saturday morning.
That's why Easter moves, you know,
mm-hmm.
because it has to stay with Passover, which moves, because they track it by the moon and all that hokey-dokey stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you have it.
All right. And then
Tony has a stricken look on his face. Do we veer off too far, Tony?
It's all right. I was going to try to add a little bit to it, but then I couldn't remember all the dates and everything. So I.
Oh, the dates for our episode?
Easter, Passover, and 40 days after Fat Tuesday, or not Fat Tuesday, but it's
Ash Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. And how the Christian religion's closer to being. Had so many nuances from other paganism religions.
Oh, to gain acceptance, they adopted many of the pagan pagan dates.
They did.
Christmas is really Saturnalia.
Well, when they took over the Vikings, when Rome and the Vikings clashed a lot mm-hmm. of our stuff was actually incorporated because they were trying to get the pagans that believed in Thor and Odin. They were trying to get them in, so a lot of that got actually incorporated too.
Oh yeah, winter solstice.
More than you actually realize.
Winter mm-hmm. solstice.
So
yeah, actually, speaking of Viking pagans, you know they're building a pagan temple, first pagan temple in Reykjavik, Iceland, in 1,000 years. Okay.
Yeah, because where they worshipped Thor, it was at this oak tree. In, I forget the name of the town.
And they recorded it all on a Linux desktop.
In Sweden. No, what's now Sweden. And they, at this oak mm-hmm. tree. Or was it in Germany? Might have been in Germany.
Is that the same Yadrigal? Door with the gigantic.
There was a Linux distro named after that. that tree or
No, that tree's Yggdrasil.
And yeah, Yggdrasil.
That's not okay. This tree.
Oh, okay. It's a different tree.
Yggdrasil is the thing that holds up the universe.
Okay.
That's the tree that holds up the universe. But anyway, when they conquered this town, the Romans, they cut the tree down and they built the church on top of where it was at.
Wow.
Nice.
Well, because the point is people are used to coming there to worship. So they cut that tree down and then put the church there, and people were used to coming there to worship, still come there to worship. And
they're forced to take on the Roman.
The Christianity.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay.
All right. All right. So,
wow, where did that come from?
Good thing you're right toward the end of the show here.
Yeah.
Going on to.
Always hit that stop button.
That's right. Going on to.
Featured music of the week.
The music this week.
Well, we never talked about Julian.
Yeah. Oh, well, Julian Makalulu.
Yes. That's what Julian said, that he's looking forward to hearing about Makalulu Linux on the next show. So, Julian, we appreciate you.
And we appreciate Tony.
Yes.
Because Tony.
Never change,
the mirth
Tony.
And merriment.
Never change.
Yeah.
Thanks. All right. Well, let's try this again. Next up is.
Featured music of the week.
The music for this week.
Did you listen to it?
No.
Well, good.
When did you send it to me?
Yesterday.
Yeah, I was driving out to my parents' house.
Okay.
Well, anyway.
We'll fire this baby up. I think you'll like it.
Springtime anthem.
Yeah.
Let the dancing begin.
Oh, you know, I started playing it, and I don't. Did we even say what it was? That was called Springtime Anthem.
Yes, you said Springtime Anthem before you started.
by Mediatronic.
Yeah, Mediatronic.
Mediatronic, yeah.
So, kind of a dance, trance song. What I did on Jamendo is I typed in Spring.
Hey.
And any of the New Age stuff, I thought, no, this isn't going to fly.
Right.
All right.
Thank you, Mary. All right. So we've come to the end of the show. This was episode 147.
Spring.
And this is Tony Bemis.
Matt Enders.
And Mary Tomich.
Saying see you next time.
I just want to make sure I don't get too close to the fist. For anyone who's listening, Matt was doing these dance gestures, which consisted of one fist straight up in the air and the other one extended forward, and then he'd switch, and I'm sitting next to him, so I was afraid that I was going to be
kinda like
pummeled.
Suicide trombones with fists, if you've ever seen suicide trombones.
And I didn't want to get pummeled. All right.
Mary's going to say it so you can decide whether to say it.
You got elected to say that pretty quick.
I did. And I was off thinking on something else. I was thinking about coronal mass ejections. Because, you know, there's this big electronic, or this big storm. And from the sun. Matt has pushed away from his mic, and
I think he's laughing. I hope it doesn't give him a stroke again.
Oh my God!
Coronal mass ejection. Where did that come from?
Well, I'm going to explain the path my mind took. Are you there with me?
Okay.
Here's what happened. I'm thinking, okay, now I want to talk about, you know, on this episode, I'm going to do a distro review. And I thought, oh, you know, Corora, but I didn't want to say the name early.
Right.
I wanted to say something, maybe Aurora. And then I thought, Aurora, oh, this week there was a lot of Aurora Borealis. And that was from the coronal mass ejection. And that's kind of where there's some method.
There was some continuity, but convoluted continuity.
My family likes me, though. Anyway, so that's where it came from. I just was thinking of something clever to say.
Coronal mass ejections. That just struck me as amusing.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
And we should have had that as part of our show name, episode name.
The Sunday Morning Linux Review with Mary Tomich, Tony Bemis, and Matt Bender.
Bite my 8-bit metal egg. That's a bite with a Y.
Hi, folks. This is Chatter. Gay Wisher Honky Magoo 5150 and I have started a new podcast. Yeah, I know we should have gotten Brian Lunduke to do the voiceover, but he wanted a script, and none of us are any good at scripting language. Anyway, it's Linux Lugcast. We're at linuxlugcast.com, IRC channel, pound Linux Lugcast on Freenode. We record on the first and third Fridays of the month, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 0200 UTC. We talk about things we've tried, things we got to work, things we failed to get working, things we built, and things we broke. Email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and if we don't know the answer, we'll just tell you to install Arch. That's a joke, son. So join us as we stifle the outcry of voices everywhere for another Linux podcast.
Open source, Linux, computers, electronics, science, and amateur radio. We cover it all. Who are we? We are Linux in the Ham Shack, the podcast that brings you and your technology together with the power of software freedom. Drop us in your favorite podcatcher or join us every other Tuesday night for the interactive live show. Visit lhspodcast.info for all the details, news, and information. We are Linux in the Ham Shack, and we want to open your mind.
The Linux Link Tech Show, live every Wednesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Tune in to the world's longest-running Linux podcast. On the web, www.tllts.org. By email, techshow@thelinuxlink.net. IRC channel, thelinuxlink.net, port 6667/techshow. And Flying Rich is so hot.
Linux Luddites is a show where we try out all the latest free and open source software and then decide we like the old stuff better.
More than just news and releases, we check out a wide range of Linux distros, cover your feedback, talk about obscure command line programs, discuss burning issues over a pint, and much, much more. So join me, Paddy,
and me, Joe, every 2 weeks for news, reviews, comment, and generally being grumpy at LinuxLuddites.com.
Linux Luddites, because not all change is progress.